Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port and trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Hey, Ohio State lost on Saturday. And then there was a big melee that happened afterwards. There was pepper spray in the eyes of people. I mean, it was a bad, bad scene altogether. Axel didn't cry, though. I thought he might cry. He didn't cry. I go, wow, this is, boy, like father, like son. I dealt with this back in the day. Of course, I mean, that was Tim Biakabatuka running all over the place, and Charles Woodson, not, who was it, Davis Warren is his name? Yep. I don't even remember the guy's name.
There's no chance. He's at a very impressionable age. There's no chance your son changes allegiance if this continues, right?
No.
Because I think for some kids that happens.
No. Listen, I am a lapsed Ohio State fan. Maybe someday he will be when he grows up, but... As of right now, he's all Buckeyes, and that's the way I intend to keep him. Dan Wetzel joins us right now, who's got bigger things to talk about than my son and whether or not Ohio State could actually fire Ryan Day at the end of this playoff. Dan Wetzel joins us right now from Yahoo Sports. He's the host of the College Football Inquirer with he and Pat Forte and Ross Dellinger, who I do listen to the podcast. He mentioned our show earlier in this month, so we got that going for us, Tone. Mentioned you and your tweet, so you got that. You feel good about that, Tone?
I'm disgusted with college football as a whole because I thought this was a sport about decorum and about people getting along, and we saw the opposite of that on Saturday.
What do you think, Dan?
I think, you know, I was expecting them to shake hands, compare chemistry class notes, maybe head over to the library or, you know, have the Ohio State kids show them around Mirror Lake. You know, just show them campus, real collegiality. Instead, I think what we have here, based on what I'm hearing, is Ryan Day is ruining Ohio childhoods. Is that inaccurate?
I would say so.
Fired for that?
Yeah. I mean,
glad it's going well. Everyone's taking it well.
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, he's still my childhood was still ruined by John Cooper. So what makes my son special, Dan? He ain't no special.
The grit.
Oh, yeah.
The grit we need in the Midwest.
Thank you.
The grit we need. It was not good. Here's your problem with the Charles Woodson ruining it, or even Tim Biakabatuka. Michigan didn't have anybody like that. Like, they didn't. I'll give their defensive line some great play, and some guys stepped up on the defense, but they didn't even play well.
No.
And they won. It's more understandable if just Khalil Mullings had a nice game. Like, I don't want to take anything from the Michigan players, but he didn't run for 330 yards or something like Tim Biakabatuka did. Like, Ohio State straight up blew that game. it wasn't like, oh, this is a talented Michigan team that just wasn't quite getting it going. They were missing Colston Loveland. They were missing Will Johnson. They were, you know, Edwards got hurt in the middle. I could not believe this result. I kept waiting. Okay, when's Ohio State going to flip the switch? Even with 48 seconds left, I was like, well, they'll flip the switch. It gained 1 yard. I cannot fathom a worse performance in a game where you spent so much time preparing for it, and the talent differential is so significant, and not just in recruiting rankings, but if you actually watch the game, kind of just going out there. I mean, the longest pass by Michigan was a walk-on quarterback to a walk-on former lacrosse player receiver. It just wasn't anything there, and yet somehow they won the game.
Yeah, I think their quarterback, Davis Warren, could have been quoted as saying beating cancer was easier than beating Ohio State at this point. So, Dan Wetzel with us on the hotline. This can't be construed as, well, Ryan Day didn't talk enough about beating Michigan. I mean, that was always the thing with Cooper. Oh, it's just another game. Ryan Day didn't treat this. You could almost argue it was the opposite. Like, he almost treated Michigan like it was too big to beat Michigan because it just seemed like they puckered up again, and it's another year of this.
Yeah, I think that is look, we're all going to play our amateur psychologists because come up with something, but that to me makes sense. The way Ryan Day talks about this rivalry is so over the top, and it feels performative. And a little bit like, well, look, I may be from New Hampshire, but I care as much as you guys, and I understand to a level of Ohio. I don't know, but like when he's discussing, this is the worst thing other than the death of my father, or this is the worst thing that's ever happened to my family, which probably has. I'm not going to, like, losing as that family and would be terrible, but they won't say the word Michigan. They cross out all the M's. The intensity, he's just so intense about it. Sharon Moore, okay, he's from, I think, Kansas. He played at Oklahoma. He's been at Michigan for about 3 or 4 years as an assistant before he got the head job. He says Ohio State, like, he wants to win. He says Ohio State. He says they got good players. He's like, it's just more like, we want to win. Ryan Day's like, we can't lose, and we will never lose again. How's that working? How are you going to go 100-0 against anyone, let alone a school like Michigan that's going to have good teams? Like, it just seems so over the top. And then you see kickers missing, and then Will Howard just looked shook in that game, especially at the end. I think Chip Kelly was shook. The stats were unbelievable. Shutout in the second half. No first downs after the 5:59 mark of the third. No targets to Smith in the fourth quarter. Only two in the third. He had one catch for, I think, 3 yards in the second half. And you have a talent like that. They weren't pressing the ball downfield at all. They kept trying to win this run game, which of course is the predictor of who wins the Michigan Ohio State game. But Michigan has no secondary, and Ohio State's got like four NFL wide receivers. It just seemed like they were so in their head. And it got so tense, and when things didn't start going well and the fans are booing, it just became, I think Michigan was happier to play this game in Columbus than they would be playing in Ann Arbor.
Well, that's what I'm kind of wondering. Like, would they have just lined up and won this game if the game was played in Ann Arbor, Ohio State? Because it's just, it felt, I was watching in the third quarter, Dan, and I'm like, I said to my buddy Brett quietly, I go, I really think they could lose this game. It looks like the pressure is suffocating them. And I thought, well, would there be as much pressure if they were actually in Ann Arbor, or would that just not matter?
It probably would have ratcheted it down, because I think, like, even you could even see when Indiana scored the one, like, Indiana took a 7-0 lead, whatever, a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And you could kind of hear the mumblings and the, like, what is going on? And obviously it ended up fine for Ohio State, but I was like, boy, if this gets to the second half and it's close, because, again, I kept waiting, like, all right, boom, 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 Ohio State's going to be up. Ohio State will still win this game, 35-10, all this stuff, and it just never happened. The boos, the angst, who knows what the direct shouts people are yelling at the sideline. It just seemed like the whole program got over-tense, And again, it's like, it's not Ryan Day calling plays anymore. You went out and got Chip Kelly, who's coached the Eagles, the 49ers, Oregon, and UCLA. You hire him from as a head coach, coming as an assistant, which almost never happens, to call plays and almost like take that off of Ryan Day's plate. And he calls a game that is even more tense than anybody else's. It's almost like it just permeated through the program. So maybe they'd be better off in Ann Arbor, where they can be the you know, just the enemy. But something's got to go. Something's got to give, because this is just not working. I mean, Ohio State's going to win. Maybe they win next year. They're going to, you know, you're not hearing Sherrone Moore saying we'll never lose to him, because he knows better than that. But this one probably hurt Ohio State as much as everything else. Can't blame it on, hey, Ohio State, Michigan's got a great team. What do we do with Aiden Hutchinson? He's hard to, you know, it's not Connor Stallions. It's not J.J. McCarthy. It is just straight up, we should have beat this team easy. And they didn't even do anything to win the game. We just almost pretty much just were so bad that this team that could not move the ball at all hung around until they won.
Will they actually consider moving on from Ryan Day in the coming weeks?
Not before the play. I can't imagine they would ever do that before the playoff. Like, I don't think it makes sense. I still think Ohio State could win the national title. I still think they have the most talented roster. Last time they made the playoff after losing to Michigan, they played a great game against Georgia. They lost, obviously, but they were right there to win the national title. So I'm not saying they will. They have a harder road now. They're going to have to play four games. They conceivably could be on the road, particularly like at Tennessee, to start, you know, in the first round, which certainly would make things a lot harder. We'll see how it all shakes out. I think they're still going to host, but we'll see. But they are good enough, and Michigan isn't in the playoff. So, you know, you're not going to have to see those guys. But let's say he loses in that first round. Yeah, I certainly think that it's a little bit of like, maybe we need you to go. And does Ryan Day want to return? He looks miserable, and he's a good football coach. But, you know, this is not fun, and I can't imagine having to carry this burden the whole year. And they've got a lot to replace, right? I mean, this is the team they built to beat Michigan. So if they lose early in the playoff and you're sitting on four losses and you're trying to scramble, and the way the calendar is, the portal's open like this week. It's hard to get all the portal players when you're in the playoffs. That's what happened to Michigan this year, and that's what's going to happen to Ohio State. It's not you can't overcome it, but it's a lot harder than if, hey, your season's done, you just do whatever you want. I would wonder if Ryan Day wouldn't be like, boy, is there anything out here I could take and just move on? So I think it's a two-sided decision here.
Dan Wetzel with us. Boy, you said, well, I still think they can win the national championship. And I think some people driving in Cleveland and all around the state of Ohio are like, really? And then I looked, odds-wise, they're the third best odds to win the national championship. I saw yesterday Peter Burns from ESPN said, boy, on Saturday, now he's an outsider, he's not from this region, but he said as an outsider, this is the first time he thought a 12-team playoff devalued the regular season because Ohio State's still going to the playoff. What if Ohio State won the national championship? What does the 12-team playoff do to the rivalry?
I don't think it changed it one bit. I mean, they didn't get knocked out of the playoff last time either, you know. So obviously, this game would mean more. This result would be even more devastating if it was, you know, 14 or they were out, right? If Ohio State
was out.
But I don't think based on what I'm guessing, what I'm sensing on the unbelievable angst and anger coming out of Ohio and the unmitigated joy coming out of Michigan, I didn't see this game mattering any. I mean, there was pepper spray involved. This game wasn't like, oh, well, we lost. We'll be good. We're resting our guys or anything like that. So I don't think Peter's got his finger on it. You get any sense that anyone's taking much solace?
No, not here. I guess in the national landscape, though, do these games are like if Ohio State did win the national championship, but the bragging rights would be very interesting between the two schools. They would be amazing. It's like, well, you beat us. You danced at our midfield. You planted the flag. There was, you know, pepper spray afterwards. And then you guys went to whatever BS bowl game and we won the national championship. It'd be very interesting.
Yeah, you got the Pop-Tart Bowl. We got the title. Yeah, that's kind of the response that I think Ryan Day needs. I mean, I think then all of a sudden it's like, okay, hey, that's fine. Would it diminish it? Yeah, you know, in some way, I guess. But if you're in that moment, I think the real concern on a playoff is, do you get to the point where you're just like, oh, this doesn't matter? Like, you're sitting in the fourth quarter and you're an Ohio State fan and you're just like, yeah, whatever, we don't need this game anyway. And that is clearly not the case. So I'm not really sure Peter's grasping just how intense this thing is.
Dan Wetzel joining us here on the show. So if Ohio State were to move on, or Ryan Day were to move on and go, you know what, this isn't for me, I'm going to go take a job with the Bears, be the Bears head coach, as if there isn't pressure there. Is it just a given that Mike Vrabel would be the next head coach at Ohio State, or would they go after maybe Marcus Freeman, or what do you think they'd do?
They're going to get a good coach. I mean, it's a plum job. So I don't know. Vrabel may sit there and say, look, he's going to have NFL opportunities too. So he may be like, I don't want to deal with the college situation. I'm an NFL guy. I'd rather be there. Does Marcus Freeman jump from Notre Dame to Ohio State? Hard to say. They're rolling there, but this is going to be look, it's Ohio State. If it isn't the best job in the country, it's in the top three. And that's one of the reasons there's so much pressure on Ryan Day and why this kind of a result is just so inexplicable. I mean, they have everything you could possibly want, including the, you know, $20 million roster, but also just the recruiting infrastructure to go get, you know, the number one recruit in the country out of Miami, Florida, a wide receiver, to say, now I'm going to say no to the entire SEC and all the schools of Florida. I'm going to go to Ohio State. Like, once you get that kind of set up. So Vrabel would certainly be interested. I kind of find it, you know, Michigan fans are like, oh yeah, Ryan Day. And it's like, you might not want him going anywhere. Because I remember when, you know, they finally got rid of Tressel and then Urban Meyer showed up. And so that didn't work out too well. So, obviously Ohio State rightfully should expect to be very, very good every single year. And, I just think that performance that was a coach culture program loss on Saturday. I go back to the fact that good for Davis Warren. That kid's a great story. I mean, he beat cancer and became that Michigan starting quarterback, but he had 62 yards passing. Michigan did almost nothing to win the game except hang around. Until Ohio State did even less to win the game. And so that's just, I normally think, you know, fans go crazy, fire the coach. I'm not saying that, but to blame Ryan Day for that is, I think, quite, quite fair.
Dan Wetzel, Yahoo Sports, also the College Football Inquirer, great podcast, great people, great man. Dan Wetzel, Yahoo Sports. Dan, we thank you very much for the time.
Always good to be on with you guys.
Thank you. Dan Wetzel joining us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. You ready for some Browns odds here? You want to hear some Browns odds?
Sure.
Courtesy of betonline.ag. Aaron Rodgers' team, week one, 2025, if not the Jets. Browns are 8-1.
So they're 8-1.
You want to get nuts? Let's get.
Hey, it's Mark Schlereth with the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. The NFL season is in full swing, and I'll be here to break down all the action like no one else can. Follow and listen to the Stinkin' Truth Podcast on your free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Because the assumption is that the Browns are just going to try and make another splash.
Yeah, why not?
Even though the guy can't play.
These are belly flops. These aren't splashes.
Turn that music back on.
Yeah.
Turn those machines and that music back on. Let's go.
I can't sit here and.
Yes, you can. And yes, you will. Come on. Yeah, baby. I opened up that email this morning. I go, oh, this is going on the air. Yeah, this is going to be said. This is going to be said on the radio.
How pumped up, though, would a faction of the Browns fan base be?
What do you mean by that, Tone?
Just Aaron Rodgers to the Browns.
Oh.
What this offense is going to be.
Never mind.
Like, because...
A faction.
We knew there was really nothing...
I thought NWO when you said faction.
We really knew there was no basis for anybody to really think Deshaun Watson coming off that surgery was going to be great this year. But yet, a huge part of the fan base was locked in before the season started.
Yeah, they were.
And thought he was going to be amazing. So, there's always going to be that. If tomorrow you said Aaron Rodgers, he's your quarterback of the Browns, those same people who were really, really pumped about Watson because of the second half against Baltimore, they'll find some good throws from this year.
Yeah.
And then that same faction will delude themselves into thinking he'd be amazing in that offense.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they probably would.
So they'll never learn.
No. Las Vegas is 5-2 on the odds to land Aaron Rodgers if he's not with the Jets.
Mm-hmm.
The Giants are 7-2 to get Aaron Rodgers, because that's what will fix the Giants is Aaron Rodgers. The Titans are 5-1. Then the Browns roll in at 8-1. You want to know who's right behind the Browns on these odds? Pittsburgh. I don't think Pittsburgh would want Aaron Rodgers unless he's playing against the Steelers. I don't think they want him even in the city. Would they? Like Pittsburgh?
Based on what I saw from Russell Wilson yesterday. And by the way, Russell Wilson was really good in terrible conditions against the Browns, I thought. What did you think of Russell Wilson?
But it's fine enough. Yeah.
I thought, I mean, he was in the vertical passing game.
It feels like it's been 18 weeks since they played that game. So I'm sure he was good. Yeah, good. Fine.
He was 21-28.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty good.
I thought he was really good.
Okay, let's split hairs again. Fine. He was really good against the Browns. Okay.
So I don't understand why it at this point, like, they're bringing back Russell Wilson.
Yeah, I don't understand that. I don't understand that. Packers roll in at 250-1. All right, so that's enough of that. 216-474-0092. By the way, did you see the Cavs had to shut a few people up last night? I was getting some people in the losses to the Hawks that felt like back-to-back. There were some people pushing against, like, Kenny Atkinson and saying that the honeymoon's over and something. Not, guys, I am definitely making a mountain out of a molehill with some of the people that were in my mentions over the weekend. Because I did. I tried to stay off social media as much as I could. They played the Wednesday game. Then they played on Friday. Didn't go their way either of those games. I started to pick up some people going, hey, what's going on with this team? I think you see the bit of the Dean Wade difference. But I think that there were some people who had to be shut up a little bit yesterday with the win over the Boston Celtics. That's all I'm going to say, Tone. That's all I'm going to say about that. 216-474-0092. I don't know if you felt that way with anybody as we get ready for this Browns game coming up.
I'm overall, when it comes to this game tonight, I'm just looking at that offense to continuously, you know, show some progress now, because it's another extended period of time that they've had to get Jameis on the same page. They're finding out what Jameis does really well. They're figuring out the Jerry Jeudy side of things. That's really what I'm looking at most tonight.
Do you think Jameis is playing for 2025 with the Browns? Not just for his future, but with the Browns?
Yeah, I absolutely think so. I'm kind of excited. I did not think I'd be excited. 2 weeks ago, if you would have told me I was going to be excited about Jameis and the Browns, I would have been like, we're just playing out the string here, aren't we? And that's not the case. Like, I know the Browns aren't going to the playoffs. I know that this has been an underwhelming year again. It's a total failure and all of that. But if Jameis can continue, and I know we've had some people go, come on, guys, we know what Jameis is. I said that 2 weeks ago. He's had 82, 83 starts in the NFL. But what are the options? What are the alternatives? So I need Jameis to play well here down the stretch.
What do we know what Jameis is? Define Jameis right off the top of your head now. Go.
I think he's a guy who has no qualms putting stress on opposing defenses, testing, being able to hit guys vertically. And he has, I don't know if he's in better shape right now than maybe he had been. He has been pretty damn elusive. He has showed some incredible mobility. I know he's only 30, but he is extending plays. I mean, he's not Deshaun Watson in that regard, but he's been pretty damn impressive, I think.
Well, let me ask you.
His movement in the pocket has really impressed me.
Define Jameis off the top of your head, Owen. I'm going somewhere with this.
He's a duck in water to me. I mean, he does not let things get him down. Like, mistakes don't weigh on him. He just keeps going on to the next thing. I think it's what you got to have on, especially where this team is right now. You've got to have a guy like that that can just move on to the next play. It's something that Baker Mayfield did pretty well for a little bit. He had 2019 things weighed on him, but for the most part of his career, it's just been, hey, on to the next play.
I beat up on Daniel Jones a lot, and I'm going to beat up on Daniel Jones again. Like, if I say, we know who Daniel Jones is, I'm going to say that as a negative. Your loaded language, the whole Andy Dalton's backup thing. I'll have that thing, and I'll say that, yeah, that's loaded language. Saying we know who Jameis is, what, a quarterback that can go out and win a football game? might not win the whole thing, might not even approach winning a conference or, excuse me, winning a division, but could possibly, maybe give you some hope to make the playoffs in 2025. Now, those are strong words to say, but I'll take knowing that other than the great unknown, which is what we all know, but we really don't want to say out loud, especially if he ends up being the quarterback in 2025, because we'll want to lie to ourselves just like we wanted to this year. We know who, if you want to talk about knowing who guys are, do we not know who Deshaun Watson is now? A broken down basket case behind, not even under center, but from the gun. I mean, that's what he is. Guys, he's been hurt the last 2 years in a row. He runs himself into sacks. He's not comfortable here. We can play this game all day. I don't know who DTR is, and frankly, that makes me nervous. Because I don't know what he's going to be from day to day, and that's nothing against him. He's just too young, too green, too so many I don't feel comfortable putting him out there with a team that's supposed to be competitive right now.
I wouldn't bet any money that DTR is some answer for the Browns. However, I did say, you know, like 5 weeks ago, like, yeah, DTR is going to play. They've got to be able to evaluate him. And people are telling me that's the dumbest thing in the world. They're like, guys, he's a fifth-round pick. He's not good.
Well, you can evaluate him in some fashion. I mean, maybe there's some things behind the scenes that he looks good, and they go, hey, we don't want to let this kid go. Okay, fine.
Well, isn't it still so bizarre? What was it? Was it the Cincinnati game that DTR, that they had it reversed all of a sudden?
Yeah.
And Jameis was the emergency quarterback?
Yeah.
So they were clearly heading in that direction. I do wonder at the end of the year if we're going to get any clarification on that when all is said and done, because that still is very bizarre.
It is bizarre, and my only thought is, my question is he so lean that you don't feel he can withstand the punishment of the NFL?
I don't think so.
Because he is a very slight young man.
They
drafted him in the fifth round. So you could say, I want to get him out there, but if I don't think that he's going to be out there for any modicum of time, like, I know Jameis Winston is a big, big body quarterback who can take shots and can absorb shots. I don't know if DTR can. And that's nothing against him. There's nothing he can do about that. But I'm just trying to be honest about all three quarterbacks we have in this situation. Deshaun Watson isn't moving a buck for Browns fans out there. They are not going to be excited about that in 2025. Jameis might get a chance to get a little bit excited. DTR, I think so many people like him as a fine young man, but I don't think that people are really trusting him past week four. Like, what are we going to do with the quarterback position once he gets hurt? Some of that is probably going to be unfair because I'm guessing on the future, but I think that that's the truth. With Jameis, we quote-unquote, we know what Jameis is. Yeah, we know a guy who's been to the playoffs. We know a guy who's going to have some stupid interceptions. Okay, well, we made one guy a beloved hero of this town last year, and he threw some of the dumbest interceptions in a Browns uniform I've ever seen. And think about how many people that takes into account. And that is no shot at Joe Flacco. But yeah, if you're going to be a good quarterback in this league, yeah, every now and then you're going to put the ball in someone else's hands because you were trying to go for it. And I could respect Joe Flacco for doing it, and damn it, I can respect Jameis Winston for doing it. And I do respect him for doing it. As long as they don't do it too much. As long as they're listening to Kevin Stefanski and Ken Dorsey, for that matter, as long as they don't do it too much, yeah. Because now my discussion is, tomorrow morning, this starts a referendum of, is Jameis my guy for 2025, or do I have to watch bowl games? Or do I have to go back and read the Dane Brugler? Because, hey, you and I have watched all the college football out there. There's a lot of people who haven't. Like, and again, I call out our own on the carpet where they're like, well, the experts say this and that. That means they haven't been watching a lot of college football because of whatever time that they have to it. All right, well, you and I have, and I can come up with opinions all day long on those rookie QBs. Well, Jameis is a guy that we're kind of hoping saves us from that because all the people are telling us that it's not going to be a great class. Tonight's that night. And if they win tonight and you get to 4-8, and then you win next Sunday in Pittsburgh, it would be the first regular season game you won since Bernie in Pittsburgh, so I'd be going nuts on Sunday night
and the end
of Monday morning. But then all of a sudden you're 5-8, you're starting to wonder, all right, can we take a swing at this? Can we actually do this?
Well, he's not.
But first steps first, he's got to impress tonight.
Is he not looking better than Kirk Cousins right now?
He is looking better than Kirk Cousins right now. Yes, he is. Yeah, for this team and for what's owed, yes. Mitch, please.
All right, guys, stemming from our talks earlier today about flag planting in college football, we have a clip from the OG flag planter, Bucks quarterback Baker Mayfield. And that's not me just coining Baker as the OG. Listen to this reporter addressing Baker on the matter on Sunday.
Many kind of consider you the OG when it comes to flag planting. What was your reaction to a lot of the flag planting we saw yesterday, and I guess maybe some of the pushback to that flag planting yesterday?
OU Texas does it every time they play. It's not anything special. You take your L and you move on. Yeah, I'll leave it at that.
Bigger, would it be a mistake for the NCAA to outlaw that?
College football is meant to have rivalries. It's like the Big 12 banning the horns down signal. Just let the boys play.
I mean, I admit it is fun. It's not fun when you're on the losing end, obviously, but now it's just going to start a fight every time. No. So they're not going to allow fights to just happen at the end of every competitive, big-time, hard-nosed rivalry game.
And the one thing that Baker's leaving out in his flag planting between OU and Texas, that's played at a neutral site.
Yeah.
At the Cotton Bowl, which is only still around just for that game.
For that game, yeah.
So, yes, you're going to plant your flag on that day at the neutral site. That is like both teams are equidistant from the site, minus like 4 miles.
Yes.
I don't know. I don't think it's a bad. Thank you very much for that, Mitch. I just don't think it should be as demonized as what it's made out to be. But at the same time, I think that all the stuff that's fun is eventually going to be sucked out of all this.
When you're pepper spraying, that starts to.
Yeah, that's where it starts to go over the line. So I think that all the stuff that used to be fun, I think eventually they'll find a way to get rid of field storming. And again, I can't condone it. When I told you about the guy, when you're seeing video of people trying to get players to hit them so they can get viral moments. I think that's asinine. I worry about trophies. I got to tell you, when are we ever going to see a situation? And we probably already have. I'm just not thinking over the top of my head. Like the traveling trophies, like if a team wins and they run over to the other sideline, when are we going to see a situation like that? Where all of a sudden there's a fight now at the other team's sideline, a melee like that. Then we'll start to have to put it the trophy or get rid of the trophies altogether. Then we'll have to do that. Like a lot of what college football is that, yeah, I'm better than you. And a lot of the stuff that makes college football stupid is still what makes it beautiful. Like, I'm no better than any. I grew up an Ohio State fan. Am I really better than anybody who grew up in the state of Pennsylvania? Am I really better than anybody who grew up in the state of Michigan? No, but I feel that way. And they feel that. They feel they're better than me. Neither of us could get into either school, Michigan or Ohio State. And they feel they're better than me because they're Michigan fans, and I would feel better than them if I were still an Ohio State fan. And that's part of the fun and beauty of college football. I wish there was a way to protect it, but do we really want to devote the resources to all that? Or we can go, yeah, it's illegal, and if we catch any of you doing it, we're suspending the player, and we're going to fine you. We're going to fine you like crazy. Bring a flag out there and see what happens.
Because
there were, what, 8 fights that one person counted on social media?
It's over. I mean, it's over. They're gonna outlaw this. And they could very easily, if they wanted to, they could just suspend the players involved going forward.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, a situation like Michigan, Ohio State, the Ohio State players had a lot more to lose. Because I saw people saying, well, they're going to go to the tape and guys are going to get suspended. Well, that clearly disproportionately impacts Ohio State in this case because we're going to the playoffs and Michigan is sitting at home or going to a bowl game that they probably don't care all that much about.
Yeah, and that part sucks. And I see the situation playing out in front of me, and it's mind-blowing to me because it's so bizarre, and that's why I can't get enough of it. Because I would tell you this right now, and I try to remain as neutral as I possibly can, but yeah, I found myself rooting for Ohio State, and Lima, you're not even rolling your eyes at me. My son's sitting right there. I found myself rooting for Ohio State in the second half. Like, wanted them to finish it off and win. Because I didn't want to see him be let down, because I remember when I was his age, getting let down every single year by John Cooper and those great Buckeye teams that lost to either better or they got punked by Michigan teams. That sucked. But, I don't know, we'll suck the fun out of that just like we do everything. And it's crazy because I go, man, with 98% of programs, like, they fired Bo Pelini, I think. Was it this day, how many years ago, and they're just now starting to get their stuff back together at Nebraska? They fired Neil Brown over at West Virginia. They've been looking for a coach since, not Bill Stewart, the guy before Bill Stewart. Guy from Ohio. Oh, God, someone's going to tweet me. Don Stein, God. Anyway, I warn 98% of programs out there about firing successful coaches. And I would warn 99% of them about firing a coach as successful as Ryan Day. You're not in that 99%. You can fire him. And you can find someone better.
Yeah, you can find a lot of coaches out there that can roll Purdue up in the first half and then go out and beat Michigan later on in the season. It's not as hard as I make it out to be. It really isn't. Not for a place like Ohio State. That's arrogant, but that's true.